Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're locked on Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The Warriors have a second consecutive off day. Feels really weird considering how many games they've been playing recently, but I wanted to do something a little bit different. I had gone through a series of different ideas for what to really do for this episode, and if you want to listen to it, the episode that I put out on Sunday night, Monday morning was a combination of the Spurs Warriors recap and then my audio case for Omri Caspi. You can read the written version as well at The Athletic. So that one is, I mean, at least the second part of it is pretty evergreen. Actually, the first part is two for right now. And what I wanted to do in this one, I considered this concept like 2 weeks ago and then was just kind of figuring out when I wanted to do it, when I wanted to put my thoughts together. And I decided to make it happen right now. And really what I wanted to go through was the difference for the Warriors, or theoretically any team, between the number one seed in the West this year and the number two seed in the West this year. And so there are three distinctive differences between those two things. And really that's about it. And so what I wanted to do is lay those out and kind of play the game of whether those matter, how much those matter. And I'll say the three right now. The first one, in chronological order in terms of the playoffs. First one is a different first round opponent, because the one seed plays the eight and the two plays the seven. Then the second one is in the second round. The one plays the 4-5 winner, and then the two plays the 3-6 winner. And then the third is home court advantage in a Western Conference final against that opponent. So if it's one versus two, the one seed has the advantage, the two seed does not. And in this case, there sometimes could be a fourth one, which would be home court advantage in the NBA Finals, but barring something absolutely catastrophic for the Warriors, they will have home court advantage over every other team in the East. So that part of it is not really a consideration here. So those are really the big factors in it. And so first things first, the difference between one and two in the first round. And this happens to coincide with the big gulf that exists in the Western Conference. So starting months ago, there was a big gap between number seven, who was number seven, changed around a fair amount, still does, and everyone else. So different teams have kind of changed within those groupings, but that separation has persisted. That separation will persist throughout the entire playoffs. And there are a couple of different important things to think about that. One is, yeah, at least for the regular season as a whole, those teams in the top seven have been better than everybody below that. Oklahoma City and Memphis are, by almost all accounts, the two teams that are in serious contention to get the number seven seed. And for the season, both of them have been better than the teams that are in the eight possibilities. And I would say right now the teams that are really in serious contention for the eight are Denver, which has a couple game lead on Portland, and then Minnesota is coming on strong. Recently beat the Warriors, actually had a nice win at home against the Washington Wizards tonight. And one piece of this that I think is very important and will change over time is the idea of the difference in outcomes. So the team that finishes eighth will have had a worse season overall for sure, but they will have won the race for the eighth seed, which has been competitive. These teams have been winning a ton of games recently. And the team that finishes seventh will have lost the race for sixth, because right now it looks like Utah and the Clippers are holding firm in the 4-5 in either order. And then it's going to be the Thunder and the Grizzlies. So whichever team is seven has fallen to seven, whereas whoever gets eight goes up there. That doesn't necessarily mean they're a better team because they rose and the other team fell. But it is an important piece of this in terms of the idea of momentum and the idea of how they got to that point. And this is the bigger crux of what I wanted to say, is that since February 1st, which is a reasonable calibration for recent, quote unquote, because that's about 20 games, the Nuggets and Blazers have been similar. They're actually sandwich. They go around Memphis in terms of net rating. So net rating is a way of calibrating whether you outscore your opponent or they outscore you. Those three teams are about even. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are a little bit below water. They had a couple of bad losses in there. So we'll see how that changes. Denver has a really hard schedule coming up. They walloped the Lakers tonight, but then they have a bunch of games against playoff teams. Portland has a lighter schedule, and Minnesota is beating everybody right now, so we don't know if they'll come on. The other element of that that we legitimately don't know right now is how injuries are going to affect it. Today also had the news that Chandler Parsons has a meniscus issue, I believe in his left knee, and he's out for the rest of the season. He hasn't really played much, so it's not this massive change for the Grizzlies, but it is something there. And the way that I would quantify Memphis is that they're a pain, but they're a manageable pain. They work hard on defense. They have some real high-end talent. Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Zebo is having a nice year. They're really their sixth man now because they're playing Jamichael Green at power forward. But it's hard to imagine them really thriving enough offensively and truly stopping the Warriors, because the Warriors can go small. They can go to Draymond at five. And that's a series that has already happened. And the principles are pretty much the same for the Grizzlies. For the Warriors, they're a little bit different. The downside of that is that the Grizzlies work really hard and they are talented. So if Kevin Durant is less than 100%, it could arguably matter more in that series. However, Memphis has been trying to figure out who to play at small forward basically the entire year, and they haven't really come up with a firm answer. So even a limited Durant who can still play, they don't really have an answer for him at this point. Tony Allen's too small. They probably put Tony on different guys, maybe Clay a little bit, maybe Steph a little bit, and go in that direction. Oklahoma City is looking better since the trade that they did at the deadline. They acquired Taj Gibson, but they're not miles better, and their team just has some major structural flaws offensively. The Warriors have already beaten the doors off them twice. Very real chance they're going to do that at least one more time. Might have even beaten them three times. I can't remember right now. Anyway, Oklahoma City, great story, good team. Russell Westbrook is my current MVP choice because of the surrounding talent with his team. But I don't think that they're really that kind of a test like before, especially because they don't have the offensive element that made them real dangerous on top of their defense. They also don't have Serge Ibaka and Kevin Durant. So their versatility and their switching, which were so pivotal against the Warriors, change around a lot, and they don't have they have basically no shooting now. Oladipo's had some moments. McDermott has been shaky. Alex Abrines coming off the bench has been okay. So I think the Warriors can game plan for them reasonably well. And then, you know, Denver and Minnesota, it really depends. I would actually, if they are good enough to make the playoffs, I would rather play Minnesota. Minnesota would be the team I want to play the least of that entire group of five. I don't think they're going to make it for the reason that they're still way behind, but they're coming on strong. Their talent, I mean, they've already also beaten the Warriors. So really for the first round, it'll depend a lot on context, and there's also the question about how injuries are going to affect that, and that's again goes into the idea of why it might actually be better to go after the 7 than the 8, is that it's very unlikely that a team that gets the 8 seed is going to be saddled with injuries, whereas a team falling to the 7 might. Like, that's kind of the nature of the thing right now. It's part of the reason why I think the higher seed should be able to choose their opponents. But I feel it's more likely that the team in the 2 seed gets that good fortune than the team at the 1 this year, just with the structure of it. Okay, so that's the first round. Second round, it's playing the 3-6 winner versus playing the 4-5 winner. So right now, we have a pretty good idea of three of those four teams. So Houston is basically locked into the 3. The Clippers and Jazz are functionally pretty close to being locked into the 4 and the 5. There's a pretty big separation now, 2.5 games between them and the Thunder, and between the Clippers and the Thunder, and the Clippers were missing Chris Paul for a lot of time, and they've played well despite their loss to Utah tonight. They played pretty well since he came back. So I would expect that to continue. So then you're making the choice between the Rockets winner, or Rockets slash Thunder or Grizzlies, the two teams I just talked about, or Clippers Jazz. And the Rockets are a wonderful team, actually. So using that same February 1st calibrator for recent, the Rockets have been the best team in the league in terms of net rating. They've had some really nice wins. They beat Cleveland on Sunday on national TV. They are great offensively. Their defense has certainly come around as well. And they have talent. And Houston also has a very good scoring bench, which could be a big problem for the Warriors because Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, and depending on how they use Patrick Beverley can really cause some problems. However, the Warriors are very well suited to defending James Harden. They've done it before, and I think Kevin Durant could really be an X factor in that series, not only because Harden's a former teammate, but because we saw this, I think it was actually in the second game that the Warriors played against the Rockets, where Durant's length can actually really work well against kind of the bowling ball guys because he can stay further away and block their shots because he's so long. He has really long arms. So you don't have, Harden can't really get into Durant's body in that way. And Houston will always play, because of their offensive gifts, they're always going to play at least one person who's a shaky defender. And when the Warriors go to Draymond at center, they can really exploit a lot of that. The Rockets are a wonderful team. I'm not saying this is an easy call at all, but the part of the reason that the Jazz and the Clippers, beyond the Rockets having a wonderful season, the reason that those two teams are behind the Rockets is because they have been less healthy. And there is no guarantee that they are going to get healthier, but their ceiling, especially for me, this is true with Utah. I think Utah's ceiling in terms of a series against the Warriors is actually higher than Houston's because they have really, really good front-end talent. Rudy Gobert is a defensive player that your candidate. He might even be the front runner, depending on who you ask. And they have talent 1-5, and they're deep. That's a big difference between the Clippers and the Jazz. While the Clippers bench actually did okay at points in their game tonight, the Jazz have a lot of guys like Joe Ingles and just kind of like, and depending on how they do it with how Derek Favors is feeling, Boris Diaw and Joe Johnson, and they can sop up basically all the minutes. Alec Burks, when he's healthy, they can sop up basically all the minutes with his team. So they're playing good NBA players basically every minute of a playoff game. We haven't seen this group in the playoffs because they missed it last year. And they have, I think Hayward played in the playoffs once when he was a real young dude, when they had, I think they still had Millsap then. But there is still a lot there that you still have to figure out. I mean, part of the reason Utah missed the playoffs last year was because their crunch time offense was so bad, and it struggled a little bit today. So you never know how that series is going to go. The Warriors, of course, have some ownership on the Clippers in recent years, though they did lose their last playoff series to them. That was back in 2014. Very, very different team. Both sides really there. So I would say that it's a close call. The most desirable team of those four would be whoever gets the sixth seed. Then I would probably say the Clippers. And then it's close to a coin flip between the Rockets and the Jazz. And the other, this also ties in with the logic I used in the first segment, which is that whoever wins the Clippers-Jazz series is going to come out of it hot. They're going to come out of it, unless they get hurt, they're going to come out of it feeling like $1 million. They just beat a really good team. If it's the Clippers, they might have done it without home court advantage. And the Rockets can kind of coast a little bit and win that series, whether it's against Memphis or against Oklahoma City. And of course, if that team pulls the upset, then while, of course, they would have that same momentum that I talked about just a second ago, they're a worse team. So a worse team having momentum is not as dangerous in that way. So I think that there is a distinction there, and there are certainly smart people in basketball who think that the Rockets are this really high danger team for the Warriors and for other teams because of their offensive capability, and their defense is underrated at times. So there are some who disagree. I think that for the Warriors specifically, it'll depend. I mean, and also just how the Jazz use Derek Favors. There are a lot of other moving pieces in this whole thing. And that leaves the one that does matter, which is home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals. Should it be Warriors Spurs? Because otherwise, you know, whoever, if the other team, the 1-2, doesn't make it, then the 2 seed is going to get home court. That's just the way it works. So in that series, home court helps. I mean, both of these teams are better at home, I believe, than they are on the road. And the Warriors in particular have enjoyed a home court advantage over the years. But the functional point here is that both of these teams are more than capable of winning in the other team's building. And the Warriors have done that. They did it last year against the Spurs. They actually broke their undefeated home streak. The Spurs beat the Warriors at Oracle earlier this year. So those have happened both ways. The Warriors have lost big games at home in recent years. The Spurs have lost a couple home games in recent years as well, and lost to the Thunder at home. And it matters, but I don't think it's that huge. Both of these teams are extremely veteran. They've won in various circumstances. The Warriors won an NBA championship on the road. And I don't think that that will override some of the other structural questions between these two teams, whether Kawhi can be dominant defensively, how the Spurs try to handle the Warriors in pick and roll, because even though it's not the thing the Warriors run the most, having Pau Gasol on the other side, depending on how Popovich uses him, I could see that defensively lighting up Kerr, kind of like how Enes Kanter does. Pau is a better defender than Enes Kanter, but you can attack him in very similar ways. So we could see that as well. In some ways, especially if it's on the second unit or with backups, because depending on how the Warriors run the rotation, that could actually put Pau in some really compromising situations. We don't know exactly what the Warriors are going to do. But the other massive one here is that what happened last time in the playoffs, and this is still the reason why full strength versus full strength, I think the Warriors have an advantage on the Spurs, is that last year, one of the reasons San Antonio lost to Oklahoma City was that Popovich, as great as he is, and I think he's the best coach of the modern era, at least personally, he has been reluctant to really change things up when something isn't working. And against Oklahoma City, their two big traditional kind of lineups just didn't work because Oklahoma City was too athletic. They were too fast. And when Oklahoma City went even smaller, when they went to Ibaka at center, went to Durant at power forward, the Spurs never really countered until it was too late. And the Warriors can go to Draymond at center lineups in the conference finals basically as much as they want. That is the time when they need to be willing to do that. And yes, it's true that Steve Kerr did not go to it as much as he should have in the NBA Finals last year. And some would argue, including me, that that helped cost them a championship. But it's so patently obvious against the Spurs, and he has so much respect for their big men's game. I actually think it's more likely to happen than with the Cavs, just because it's pretty clear that how you get Dwayne Dedmon off the floor, how you get Pau Gasol off the floor, is by playing Draymond at center. And that is a bigger factor. Kawhi's defense, Danny Green's defense, those things are all more important than home court between these two teams specifically, considering their track record. And I also don't think that those games are going to be particularly susceptible in terms of officiating, like, oh, a big home or big road whistle. Like, there's a random chance of that in every game, and most refs do give a more favorable home whistle. That's just the way that the league works. That's the way that basically everything works. But I don't think that's going to be enough to swing it, especially because depending on how you feel about the NBA structure, it could also feel like that really primarily matters in a game seven, especially if the road team gets a split in the first two games, which happens fairly frequently. Actually, for those who remember, the Warriors did that back in 2013, even after Richard Jefferson blew those free throws and the Warriors collapsed in that game one against the Spurs. The Warriors came back and won game two of that series. And then at that point, really all you have to do is hold serve, win 3 and 4, and then win 6, and you're fine. So the Warriors have lost that split as the home court team a few different times in the playoffs, most notably actually against the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals last year. They lost game one of that series, which arguably they should not have, but they did. And so I think that the Warriors would have a lot of motivation to do that, and certainly having game seven, if it comes to that, would help. But I think it's a little bit overrated. So what this is kind of getting at is the idea that, for me, knowing what we know now, and the circumstances on the ground can change drastically in the next month. It can change next week. It could change with an injury on the last day of the regular season. You don't really know that. But the overall structures, knowing what we know right now, I think they are slightly favorable to the number one, but not massively so. And that changes by circumstance. And right now, it's not looking like both the Thunder and the Grizzlies are world beaters, and the Rockets are playing excellent basketball right now, but I don't consider them this just deadly team for the Warriors based on how they're structured. And that's the way I feel. Other people will disagree, and I fully respect that. There are a lot of different ways to take this, but if you look at those three factors separately and then collectively, I don't think it's that big a difference, at least for the Warriors, between number one and number two. And if that's true, then it's not worth putting any significant strain, other than maybe at the very, very end, if you can determine that outcome yourself, to make it go the other way. That said, I talked about this on the podcast after the game in Minnesota. I still would have switched those and played the Stars against the Spurs and not against the Wolves. That's how I would have done it. It does help your chances of getting the one seed. I still would have done that. I'm not saying you basically tank for the two. I'm just saying you're more ambivalent about it at this point, and then you don't over push it. So that's the way that I would really treat it. And That's enough for right now. The Warriors will, of course, play tomorrow against the Philadelphia 76ers, who are missing Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons hasn't played the whole year. But they've been pretty feisty the last little while. They've given some teams some games, so that'll be worth watching and listening to Locked On Warriors, of course. After that, if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, at DannyLarue on Twitter. I read everything. I respond to what I can. But if you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. And hopefully that's what matters to you more than getting a little typed response from me. And if you want to support the show, there are a lot of different ways you can do it. You can leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. iTunes is great. Doesn't have to be. And then also subscribing, downloading every episode. That's a really big thing you can do to help. I also have Warriors-related material coming out. I guess it's going to be later in the week with Arturo Galletti for Real GM Radio. We talked about it, and then I have already brought this up on the show, but Real GM Radio last week with Nathaniel Friedman had a lot of Warriors conversation, which I think you'd really enjoy. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.